start seeing the counter on your phone. Hello, everyone. This is our series of conversations around financial freedom. And we have with us Manoj Arora, who's the bestseller author of the book around financial freedom. We've had one previous conversation with Manoj where he was explaining about why financial freedom is important and how to think about them. Today, we are going to extend some of the principles around that and probe Manoj more to understand how each one of us can better manage wealth and better aspire to achieve the financial freedom. So welcome, Manoj.
Hi, thanks, Ashwini. Thank you for the lovely introduction.
It's a pleasure to have you here, Manoj. So Manoj, as a starting point, would you want to just give us a quick overview of what do we mean by wealth management principles?
Okay. So Ashwini, basically, there are certain principles related to managing wealth, which are time tested and which have been there for ages. What typically happens is we tend to forget them with time, and it's very, very important that we, review them, understand them again, and refocus on those principles. And they are so time tested that, I mean, they just do not fail. Things change, your investing strategies can change, your way you handle your money can change, where you transact your money can change, but those basic principles of managing wealth remain the same.
Right. So Manoj, if we were to go down that path of understanding some of those principles, what would you recommend? What is that first and most key element of these principles to start understanding?
Right. So I think the first principle which I would say, which comes at the top of my mind, is if you go to build wealth, whether it's financial freedom or otherwise also, you got to have a very, very strong reason why you're doing it. There are a lot of people, who want to get financially free. Whenever I transact with them, the first question that I ask them is, why do you want to get financially free? Financial freedom can never be your end goal. It can be a means to achieve something bigger in life. I gave a few examples during our first talk as well. So I wanted to be financially free, but there are very strong reasons to be financially free. So I wanted to have a lot of time to spend with my children. I wanted to start an NGO for tree plantation. I wanted to write books. I wanted to help so many people achieve freedom, which I am doing now. So there has to be a stronger reason behind trying to build wealth. So having a very, very strong reason is vital. And why I'm saying this is vital is because this process of building wealth is not complex, but it needs a lot of commitment and discipline. And commitment and discipline, things like these do not come easy to us, And if you have a very strong reason to do it, you will then be able to, go through this journey relatively smoothly. So I think that's the first principle which I would say. You've got to find a reason why you need wealth. Otherwise the journey is going to be difficult for you.
Very true, Manoj. Very true. So, just to probe you a bit more on that, what would you say is a great reason, actually? What would be in your mind or in your conversations while you've written about a lot about it? What were some of the reasons which came across as potential reasons, sustainable reasons because of which people build it, genuinely positive reasons why people find that energy to build it? So what were some of those reasons
Absolutely.
which came across in your understanding?
Great question. So, Ashwini, I think, interacted with close to 4,000 to more than that, in fact, people who want to really get financially free. And the topmost reasons I would, if I have to group them, would typically be into doing something for others. When I say doing something, could be there are a lot of people who want to, let's say, elevate their society like I was there, then there are people who want to, you know, do something for the underprivileged children. There are people who want to do something for the environment. There are people who want to do for various causes, you know, people are ready to do. And, you know, but the challenge with all of them is that they are stuck today. You know, they're stuck in their own race to either earn money, or they don't know how to, you know, come out of it, and they're all stuck. So, but that reason, you know, is potentially one of the biggest reasons I saw as a common thread among all the people I interact with. And of course, there are other things which people want to do, which could be like people want to roam around the world, they want to see things. People want to follow their passions, which could be things like painting, photography, sports. A lot of people want to go into meditation, which they don't find time otherwise, or even if they find time, they're too stressed out to, you know, really focus on those things. So there are a lot of reasons, but potentially the biggest one is people want to help others, whether it's somebody in the society or they want to do something for others. And I think financial freedom gives them a hope that, yes, I mean, that's possible to do. If they can secure their family, it's really possible to do.
Right, Manoj. In fact, across literature, there is this, there are many people which are now talking about starting with why. There's an author called Simon Sinek who specifically wrote a book around this. And your first point exactly goes back to that, that first of all, understand why you want to build it. So that's absolutely a fantastic starting point for somebody. So let's say Manoj, I have figured out, or who listeners have figured out that, okay, why they want to create wealth. Now, how would you suggest, what do they do as a next step?
Next principle I would say is get started. You know, there's so many times you figure, but you're waiting for some magic moment before you get started. And I have, you know, I have done this myself, this mistake, you know, when I was, you know, it was a long time back, but when I was trying to invest in stock markets and all, you know, I was thinking, how do I start? When do I start? Do I have enough knowledge? You know, all these questions keep coming to my mind. And then I used to think, okay, I mean, I remember I at least spent around 3-4 years, you know, just thinking about whether I should get into it or not. So, you know, that starting itself is a big, big challenge for people. So I would say start. You know, that's the second principle. You will learn on the way. There is no way anybody is going to be perfect. It's a lifelong journey to build wealth. It's a lifelong learning. You got to get started. If you figured out your why, there should be nothing stopping you. In fact, if you truly figured out your why, you won't be able to resist yourself. You got to get started somehow. You will learn on the way, you know, so starting is important. And when I say start, I would rather say you have to start as early as you can, because, you know, time becomes a very, very big factor. And we touched on this particular point in our first talk as well. Time is going to be your biggest lever to generate wealth. You know, of course, you're going to learn financial techniques, strategies, all this stuff is fine. But the biggest thing that you have in your hand is time. And when you're young, if you're getting started at that stage, nothing like it. So nothing beats time. So you've got to start. You've got to start as early as you can. That, I would say, goes on to be the second principle which everybody should follow.
Right. Well, just one question around that. And I think one of the somebody in the listeners also probably wanted to have this question answered. So, but like you said that, you know, so let's say I am somebody who wants to build wealth. And as soon as I, like you said, that I figure out my why, that, okay, I want to do this because of this. But then getting started, do you mean by getting started, okay, you know, start immediately trading without really understanding the risks? Or you're saying that, okay, get started with at least, you know, getting the right knowledge, or at least looking for the right mentors, or looking to the right sources who can then guide you. So when you say get started, just to, you know, clarify a bit more, is it getting started with, you know, immediately putting your money to use, or putting your, you know, taking those decisions, or getting started, okay, start acquiring the right knowledge, start getting the right mentors?
Yeah, I think the topmost of it would be start getting a right mentor, you know, because Before you can invest your money, first of all, you got to take charge of your money. There's so many people I know who don't even know where all their money is lying, how much money is lying, what returns it is earning. They have no clue. If I ask a person who's newly, you know, comes to me, I would ask him, okay, how much of assets do you have? You know, he'll tell me, okay, maybe 1 crore, maybe 50 lakhs. He has no clue. He hasn't yet taken charge of his money. Okay, how much returns each of the assets are giving? No idea. How much is your exact expenses per month? How much is your earning? So what are you saving? So see, these are very, very basic, simple things which we lose control. We are so focused on earning money that we have lost control on what to do with the money that we have already earned and saved. You know, so when I say get started with getting a person or a mentor who can tell you how to take charge of your money first before you talk about investing that money.
I think that's, Manoj, absolutely fantastic point. Because taking charge of the money which you've hard earned money is itself the starting point. Because given the distracted world that we live in, and given that people around, especially our Generation Z, which is lost in so much social media, you know, inundated into social media crowd and all that, they are not really, they don't even know what are their income sources, where is money lying. And so this is one of the principles, you know, get control of your money first. Get a good hold on money is. Yes, absolutely.
I mean, I'll tell you, I ask people, okay, tell me an idea about what average expenses you have in a month. Somebody will say, okay, 50,000. They say, okay, for 3 months, we're going to jot down each of your expense. After 3 months, we'll say, it's not 50,000, it's 80,000. This is very, this is the average deviation, I'm telling you. There have been bigger cases than this. So, this is a very simple thing. If somebody doesn't know how much money he or she is spending, how do you expect him to generate massive wealth? Okay.
Absolutely.
So this is very, again, as I said, building wealth is not complex. It's, you know, it's like running a marathon, you know, it's not complex. I mean, unless you're, you know, running it for a medal or something, if you just run and finish and have fun with it, it's not complex. But, you know, it needs some discipline. It needs some commitment from your side. It's not that easy also that anybody can go and run it. There's nothing complex about it, nothing scientific about it if you're running for fun. But you need some commitment, you need some discipline. Same goes with wealth. You need some commitment and discipline. There's nothing complicated about it.
Very well said, Manoj. Very well said. So what after that? So I've now understood my reason for creating wealth. I've taken control of my money, or at least wherever all my sources of income are. Yeah. What do I do next?
So you've started on the journey to build
exactly.
wealth, basically.
Yes.
So then you got to start really thinking about how much you're saving, how much you're spending. And we follow a very basic principle here called as pay yourself first. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether you've heard of it. It's a very time-tested, very old principle, but truly, truly valid and much more applicable in today's world. What it says is your definition of investment. Normally, we follow an equation called as income minus expenses is equal to savings, which basically means I earn some income, I spend some money, and whatever is left is what is my saving, and then I try to invest that saving. You know, that's the mm-hmm. general principle people follow. But pay yourself first says income minus savings is your expenses. So what it means is, you earn some income, you first save. How much you save? You got to have a plan for that. You got to consult somebody how much you can save. First you save, and then whatever is left is you're going to spend. Okay, so spending comes after saving. If you follow this is why we call it as pay yourself first. So before you pay your electricity bills, before you pay your telephone bills, before you pay your grocery bills, you pay yourself. Okay. So of course you need a plan for that. So how much you're going to save. But if you follow this principle that on the first of the month, once I've got my salary, I got to save first and then I got to spend. Very time tested, very practical, very applicable in today's world.
This is absolutely the simplicity of it is so compelling, Manoj, that this I think that every Generation Z person should be listening to this and at least doing bare minimum of doing that. At least saving something before they go out and swipe that card, before they go out and pay through that wallet, go to the
True.
next pub or club, whatever they want to do. I think pay themselves, save for their future first, or at least invest in
And
themselves.
you're not asking them to, stop living their lives. So we're not saying you don't have to really spend anything or just pay your bills and grocery and don't spend. We're not saying that. Go enjoy whatever you want to do, but you first pay yourself. Whatever you
Right.
think you deserve, you pay yourself, and then go whatever you want to do with your money.
And then there also, Manoj, is there some very high level benchmark or a percentage, which somebody who's just starting on this path should keep in mind that, hey, let me just start with maybe 10% or 15% of whatever is my income. Is there some, should there be some guiding principle they should keep that in mind as
No,
well?
put any such principle there. Although if you read a lot of books from foreign authors, you'll find that 10 to 20% is the minimum you should be saving every month. But there's nothing like that. It's all driven by your why. I was so fascinated about opening up my tree plantation NGO. I was saving 60% of my earnings. When I really got into this entire financial freedom thing. Before that,
Wow.
I was only saving 20%. So
Wow.
again, there are no guidelines. It's all driven by how fast you want to be financially free, how fast you want to be wealthy, which is driven by your why. And if you want to speed it up, it can be as high as 70-80% of your income. Again, I have people, freedom seekers from all categories. So people who are into negative savings also, and people who are saving 80% of their salaries also. But again, it depends on a lot of factors, and there's a lot of role of a family also involved in this, because when you're into family and you have children and people to take care of, then of course, I mean, everybody has to contribute, and it may not be really possible for everyone to contribute and understand your why. So it's very, subjective. But I would say minimum, anybody should, when you're starting your career, you should at least save 30-40% of whatever you're earning.
Fantastic. In fact, Manoj, there are a few, I think, questions there which people have been asking. In fact, there are a few callers who want to join in. I think I'll put them off till the end of our conversation. There's a question, I think Rahul has been asking a question. Maybe necessary expenses better than savings, and then after savings, discretionary expenses. So maybe in the equation, there you can even split your expenses if there are some which,
Yeah,
for
I
example,
mean,
paying your
correct.
bills, paying rentals.
Yeah. And that's true. And as I said, so when I say save first, it basically means is you got to understand how much you can potentially save. So if there are any necessary expenses, they of course you cannot save that. So you got to consult your planner, financial planner, to really understand, I mean, how much saving is possible for you.
Right. So, Manoj, I'm just going to maybe digress a bit. So one of the things also, now that we are on this topic, one of the things that I've seen with a number of people, at least in my age or even younger, is this whole phenomena of keeping up with Jones. That your next door neighbor, that they want a similar big screen TV or they want a similar car. So, how do you I'm if please correct me if we are digressing from the topic, but if it is related, please, how do we put those blindfolds and just focus on our long-term goals? Because this world or this, instant gratification or short-term gratification has just taken over a whole generation now. So, how do we put those blinders on?
What you're saying is absolutely right. And There is no way you or me can control anyone. No financial planner can control somebody's urge to, you know, compete with the society. But I can only share with you a few examples. One is Warren Buffett. He still drives a second-hand car. And, you know, I'll tell you my own example. I was in US for a few years when I was working, when I was not yet financially free. And I was, you know, pursuing this freedom journey. And there were times when, you know, I was earning so well and it was very easy for me to, you know, just go and buy the best of the latest cars available there. And all my colleagues, even my juniors, you know, when I was there, my team in my project, they were having some good cars. And I had that luxury, that option to buy. But, you know, I survived with probably a lower model. And I never felt like being in guilt or anything, because I was being driven by a goal which, you know, which convinced me that it's what I'm doing is short term and I'll come out of it and ultimately be financially free. So it's all driven. Again, it goes back to our first principle,
Absolutely.
Which is our why.
Why?
Unless that is strong enough, nobody can, you know, nobody can help somebody build massive wealth. That why has to be very, very strong.
Absolutely.
You know, time permits, I want to share a very small small example.
Please, go ahead. Yes.
You know, let's say you have a house and let's say there's a fire in your house. You know, the first thing you would do is get out of the house. You know, first you got to save yourself and your family, right?
Mm-hmm.
But let's say you come out of the house and you're never going to, you know, get into the fire unless it is doused. But let's say there is a small baby left behind. Now the entire situation changes. Now your reason to get back into the house is so strong that you won't really bother about that fire.
Mm.
Right? So ultimately, whether you get back into the house which is burning or you do not get back into the house, it's all driven by your reason. Why would you do it?
Yeah.
So whether you want to buy the latest Apple gadget or you want to buy a latest car or the TV or whatever, it's all driven by why you want to spend that money or why you want to save that money. It's
right.
As simple as that.
Right, Manoj. Manoj, I think we've digressed a bit, and I would love to come back to the topic. But just maybe one last question while we are on this.
Sure.
You know, I think this discovering your why itself, you know, should have been one conversation in itself. Because it's so important. We keep going back to it. So,
yeah.
Just one final. So let's say today I decided what my why is, or somebody decided what their why is. But as life progresses, it changes. As life progresses, there are so many things which change in your life. So,
absolutely.
So is it good practice, you know, just keep going back to it and realigning it, or, you know, just seeing that, okay, this is maybe now it's the time to then recalibrate it. Okay. Probably I'm looking for other things in life, or maybe family, or maybe, you know, doing something else in life becomes important. So let me save for that rather, or build wealth for that. So how often, or what is that, you know, that North Star reason? How do we keep aligned with that? And how often do we keep going back to it? You know, when do we decide, okay, now I've lost motivation to this one? Just some more guiding principles around the building that why.
You know, so you very rightly pointed out, there is nothing, I believe, which is like a passion of your entire life. Now, you may be passionate about something today for probably next 5 years, 10 years, maybe 20 years. But it's quite likely, which I have experienced with myself as well, and with so many other people I've seen, it's likely to change over a 10, 20 year period. It very easily changes. I mean, there was a time in my life when I was so passionate about working for the best of IT companies in the world. I was very passionate. When I was actually not into IT industry, I was into an electrical, I'm basically an electrical engineer, so I was into that stream. I was very passionate, and ultimately I could achieve my dream. I worked for some of the best IT companies in the world, whether it's IBM or TCS or whatever you name them. But then slowly, you know, it changed over 10-20 year period. It changed. Then I wanted to be financially free. Then I wanted to write books. And now I want to do a lot of other things in life. I want to do something for the environment. I want to do something for children. So things are changing, they're evolving, and you would know it. A person knows it. Somebody who's driven by passion would not bother about how much money he's earning from that particular thing, would not bother about day and night, will never get tired working on that particular thing. Which, I mean, so these are the things which tell you whether you're passionate about something or not. And it changes. So you got to, if you're losing focus, if you're losing momentum, you got to recalibrate. In fact, one of the things that we do in our website, there's a forum where we ask people to come and jot down your passions. And a lot of other people, other freedom seekers, you know, they get inspired by the passions of others. So that's how it works. You know, there's no hard and fast rule that you identify it and that's going to remain fixed for the rest of your life. Nothing like that. It can change.
True, true, true. So Manoj, I think we should continue our wealth management principles maybe we should continue it in another conversation. Would you think so? Hello? Manoj, can you hear me? Hello? This is to all the listeners. I think maybe Manoj is not able to connect right now. So I'm calling out to Shomit Srivastava. Hey Manoj, I can hear you. I can hear you. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So I
wanted to cover one more point, one more principle before we, you know, split this call.
Sure.
So that's called as unleashing the power of compounding. So compounding, you know, is something which all of us have heard. I think you have also heard about it. I think every child, I would say, who's gone into 10th standard has heard about compounding, knows the formula, knows probably how to even calculate compound interest. Everybody knows it. But none of us probably, except for a few, truly realize how big it is. So, you know, when I go to some seminars and ask people, okay, how different is compound interest from simple interest? I mean, is it drastically different? So, no, it's some extra interest, definitely, but I mean, we don't really see a huge difference. While Albert Einstein says compounding is the eighth wonder of the world. So, you know, there's some gap somewhere. Okay. And so, you know, when I give some examples, let me also share a quick example here. So, if I give you a piece of paper, an ordinary piece of paper from a copy, let's say, and ask you to fold it, okay, and fold it in kind of into a half. So you have basically doubled the thickness of the paper. And ordinary paper, if you do 50 folds like this, do you know how thick it can become? Do you have any? Just give you. Want to make a guess, Ashwini?
So each time it's doubling. So you're saying 50 times it doubles.
So let's say 0.1 mm thick paper, a regular paper. Okay.
Right, right. So
54. So make a quick guess.
Okay. So 10 times it does, it is 1000, then raised to the power 5. So that will be about, how do you say, million, 3 times million or something like that? Guessing.
So yeah. So how many meters or how many centimeters, meters, give me a rough idea. It's 0.1 mm thick. Don't try to calculate. I just want to understand want you to realize the power.
Maybe it'll become around 100 kilometers or maybe 100 of the order of that.
So 100 kilometers. So actually it goes into lakhs of kilometers.
Wow.
Okay, and you know, 100 kilometers, I have most people, even who are from financial background, who have been working and dealing with finance, with clients and suggesting them portfolios and doing all those things, their thinking doesn't go beyond 50 meters, 100 meters, not beyond that. And that's the higher level empty. And it's lakhs of kilometers. But the beauty is not that 50 folds gave you lakh kilometers. Beauty is, what is the 51st fold going to give you? It's going to give you whatever
double
first 50 fold. So one extra fold can give you, has the power to give you what the first 50 folds gave you. So the point here is compounding works together with time. And we talked about starting early, you know. So compounding works together with time to leverage time and create magic for you. But the magic is not created in the first few folds. The magic is created in the last few folds. Okay. And so you got to give it time. And that's why it's important to start early, so that you have time for those last few folds.
Wow.
Okay. So you got to really, you know, we all understand what compounding is, but we don't realize how powerful it is. So I have my children who understand compounding. They are still in 10th standard and 12th standard. They don't earn money, but they handle money. They earn interest. Even if it's a simple savings account interest, it's important for them to understand what compounding is, how powerful time is in their life if they have to generate wealth. You know,
wow.
So this principle is very simple again, but we must realize how powerful it is.
That is fascinating. Actually, you're absolutely right. If it works in such a way, it's fascinating for people to see that. And it's a shame if, you know, people don't see through the whole power of compounding itself. And
yeah,
now that you mentioned it, it just doesn't work in one field. Wealth is what we're talking about today. You know, money. I think compounding works in other ways also. For example, you know, if you do something well and you keep doing it consistently over well, you keep getting better at it. And it's sometimes the change is not just incremental, it adds multiple. And you know, understanding compounding at a very fundamental level beyond a formula is so critical. It's so critical. So Manoj, I just have one question. So for example, so I have this privilege of talking to you, and listeners are privileged to listen to this example that you've given. But you know, how do a common person who is not exposed to such knowledge, who has not gone out and seek such knowledge, who has, you know, actively looked for this knowledge, how do they realize this? What is a good way for them to understand that this is what how money or how anything works in the world?
Well, I mean, unless they go and seek, it's very good. It's going to be very, very difficult for them to really realize its potential. I had a trigger moment in my life, which I talked about in the first talk, when I realized the power of compounding. That was somewhere at the age of 32, 33. Today I'm 44. So it was a very it was a coincidence. I saw something and that triggered something inside me. But you know, unless you're seeking information or you have divine blessing, it's going to be very difficult to truly realize the power. You will think that you know compounding. That's the problem. But you will never realize how powerful it is. For your entire life, you will keep thinking you know compounding.
Wow. And
so yeah, that's, I mean, you got to read, you got to consult, you got to, I mean, you really got to seek out.
Right. So Manoj, here before we close, I'll just share a quick anecdote, which got me thinking about this whole compounding, and actually when it struck me. So there was this New York Times article where this very old lady, she was a clerk throughout her life. So no major income source, very basic income. She died at the age of some late 90s. So she retired at early 50s. And then for 40 years, her money just grew. And she kept saving, like, you know, a very meager amount. She kept saving. But for all her professional life, which was 30, 40 years. And then beyond that, all her retired years, which was another 30, 40 years. Her money was just there growing. And by the time she died, she was a multi-millionaire, apparently. She had something like $30 million in her account by the time she died. So there was just point out.
Yeah, so that's exactly the point of financial freedom is. You go to collect enough wealth which can set you free, and then you decide what you want to do with your life.
Right.
Okay, and your money will keep growing even if you're not earning anything. That's financial freedom.
Right. Absolutely, Manoj. I
Right.
think.
Yeah. So I think we touched only 4 points, but I think there are four more principles which I want to talk about, which of course we'll continue in our next
right.
talk.
So Manoj, before we close, just one, I'll take one question from listeners.
Sure.
It's a, I think we've answered bits of it, but it'll be great if you can, you know, just sum it up with that. So the listener is Shomit Srivastava. His question has been that how can we manage unplanned expenses? So in that equation, I think it's coming from the equation we talked about. So if there are, you know, if you save first, you pay yourself first, and then there are expenses, and these are potentially your planned expenses, because that's what you have oversight of. So you plan for those planned expenses, but what if there is a sudden medical emergency, or what if there is a sudden unplanned expense which comes? How does that fit into that equation? How do we allocate, make allocations for that particular expenses?
So there are various techniques we use, you know, when we do financial planning for various freedom seekers. One is, of course, you don't go by 1 month or 2 month or 3 month of expenses and see how much is your expenses. We take in and keep improving on the data month on month, and we try to average out the data over last 12 months or 24 months and then see, because those 12, 24 months will cover certain unplanned expenses automatically. You know, so that's one way to do it. Second, when we plan our expenses and our financial freedom, we also keep a buffer. Okay, various buffers we keep, but we can keep buffers like, okay, I'll keep 10% buffer every month for certain unplanned expenses. That's second technique we use. Third, we look at possible future events. You know, one is how much you're spending today, you know, but that's not likely that you're going to continue spending the same heads for the rest of your life. So you're going to, your expenses are going to change with time. So we try to forecast our expenses also, again, keeping a lot of buffers in place. So entire planning activity, you know, works on these principles. So this, all these things, you know, reduces the risk of, you know, unforeseen expenses. Having said that, still, you know, life is not going to go as per your plan. Okay. Life is going to give you surprises. So there's always going to be times when we're going to replan. No plan is 100% perfect. All plans are based on assumptions. We've got to keep tuning our plan as we go along. And that's how we do it.
Right. I think, Manoj, that was very insightful. And I hope that I myself have actually revised a few of these principles now, that because in day-to-day life, you tend to keep, you know, ignoring. You tend to just get the work done. But I think it was a great revision. In fact, learning from me, your stories were super interesting. And I'm sure for a lot of listeners who are, some of them are at a younger age as well, probably it's that moment for them where they also realize and start figuring out their why.
Yeah, the most important thing. Correct.
Right. So Manoj, thank you so much for taking this time out and sharing with us these insights. Would love to catch you again to cover more principles and, you know,
sure,
bring about a holistic understanding of wealth management.
Sure, Ashwini, wonderful talking to you.
Same, Ramesh. Thank you so much, and
thank
have a great
you.
Day.
Have a wonderful day. Yeah,
bye-bye. Bye.